You're listening to audio from the 2023 Liturgy Collective Conference, a gathering that fosters rest, connection, and growth for church musicians, pastors, and worshipers. For more information, visit liturgycollective.com.
My goodness, I miss them so much just watching this film. You saw all of our clients and the people that we work with. So this Pastor Guy Rodriguez is a chief vision officer of Embers International and leads our field team of about 30 people. And I started this work that we call anti-human trafficking, really fighting modern-day slavery, which we should all feel very compelled to really think about, because right now we have 50 million people who are enslaved in this world, and that is the largest number in human history, period. 50 million is, to give you a little context, the entire population of Canada is 30 million. So out of 50 million, we have about estimated 29 million in South Asia, and most of them are India. So when I started this work about more than 20 years ago now, I had this privilege of working with just incredible organizations like International Justice Mission, Restore NYC, BTS, and BTC. And all these organizations have this incredible view of what God's justice looks like or should look like in this world that is so broken. And I met Pastor Guy when I went to India for the first time. I'm a full-time lawyer and also an entrepreneur. So I practice law on a full-time basis and run my office in New York and New Jersey. But I used to work at a law firm before. And finally, when I started my own business, I had the time to go to India. So by this time, I've been doing this work for over 10 years, and I thought I knew a lot because I know the stories. I worked at the organization, so I know what happens with the people who are trafficked, and especially young girls and minor, and including boys, actually, who are trafficked into this horrendous crime. Because human trafficking and slavery is indeed a crime all over the world. So I was really excited because finally I get to actually meet the people who are doing frontline work, and especially in India where we have the most number of people who are enslaved. So I emailed a friend of mine who actually worked at International Justice Mission with me, and she also had a fellowship in India with IJM office. So I thought she would be so excited and respond to me immediately after I sent that email, but she had no answer for a month. And just about a week before I left for India, she finally replied, and she said, "I hope you get to love India as much as I do." And God spoke to me through that email, because I actually didn't know whether I could love India, because I know too much about the trauma. When a minor girl is trafficked, in a very a typical story, and there are different ways that this crime happens, but in places like urban cities of India, a girl will be trafficked from a very impoverished region, from the lowest caste. That means casteism is based on your profession, so that means they are either garbage pickers or day laborers, and they have not been educated for generations. So when a girl is trafficked, the family has no way of knowing where the girl was taken. A lot of times there's a deceit and fraud involved. So they are promised a job in urban cities because the family is too poor to feed all the siblings. So the oldest one will go to urban city like Mumbai to be a domestic servant or restaurant staff. And of course, that's a lie. By the time she reaches Mumbai, she has been drugged on the train, and she wakes up in a brothel. And what happens at the brothel is is unspeakable. To break the will of this little child of 10, 11, 12 years old, the youngest one that we have rescued is 5 years old. They will lock her up in a room with no windows, sometimes up to 7 years, and beat her every single day. Drug and force feed alcohol and rape her every single day so that her will is broken and she cannot think straight and she won't run away even if she's let out on the street. And this is injustice. This is darkness. This is the kind of trauma that shouldn't happen anywhere in this world. Now, I knew these stories. So by the time I was ready to go to India, I was ready to meet them, ready to meet the people who are rescuing them, the people that I've been working with and supporting. And then God brought me to a brothel as an undercover. If you saw the film last night, New Creation, you saw a glimpse of that story. In that brothel, I learned something new for the very first time, that there are actually lives born in that filthy space. So there are actually second and third generation who are trapped in this darkness that I actually never knew until 10 years ago. So God really spoke to me to do something about them, about this intergenerational curse and exploitation that nobody was really talking about. And I look for organizations who can do this work of intergenerational rescue and empowerment, and there was none. So I had to go back every year for the next 3 years. And because I met Pastor Guy the first year I went to India and was really struck by his vision and his heart for the people who are in the lowest caste and in the impoverished area, as well as the people in the red light district. He's an educated man. He was a teacher. He was actually a music teacher and musician himself, became a pastor and has a huge heart for the poor. And when I went with this big question of, can I love this country? Because in order for me to serve the people in this country, I must love this country. And I want to, but I don't know if I can. So I had that question to God, God help me. And when I landed 10 years ago back then, even so now, but even more so back then, that on the street you will see maybe 70-80% of the people who are on the street are men. And it's my estimation, but it's probably a reasonable one, that one out of three men on the street that I'm seeing right now are probably perpetrators. So in that reality, how do you love this country? And then the very first devotion that we did on the first day of this trip, our teammate opened C.S. Lewis, The Great Divorce, and read the passage about Sarah Smith. Sarah Smith is a woman that this man who went to heaven, and the guide who was showing him around in heaven met this woman named Sarah Smith. And Sarah Smith is, of course, in heaven now, and she has this appearance of glory and beauty, almost transparent because she was just so brilliant and radiant. And behind her, there's rows and rows of people following her and rows of animals following her. So the person who's being introduced to the heaven asked the guide, oh, she must have been someone of great importance to have this kind of following behind her. And then the guy said, oh, her name is Sarah Smith. And she was actually, her name tells us that she was really an ordinary person. But the people who are following her are her children. Because these are the people that she cared for during her life on this side of eternity and have become her children. And When I read that, God spoke to me loud and clear. I will show you Sarah Smith in this country. And Pastor Guy is one of those Sarah Smith that I met in my first trip. And by the time I left that trip, I wanted to stay. I let my heart there. And I got to love this complicated, incredible, and very broken country. And after 3 years of going back and with my co-founders of Embers International, collectively 7 trips, we couldn't find any organization who's doing intergenerational work for the most broken people and in the darkest places of the universe. So we started Embers to fill that gap. And the very first thing that we did when we started was actually making. Pastor Guy and my team in India have this mindset of, I want to transform the worldview of the children who only see the darkness, these children who are born into violence, and many of our children still have to go back to that darkness. And I call all of our children the Daniels in the lion's den. And Holy Spirit has to go with them to protect them tonight. But Pastor Guy led me to a red light district that we're serving right now and showed me this run-down, former abandoned brothel. And it looked like hell to me. And I'm pretty adventurous person, but I didn't want to go inside. Because it just was shouting out, I am full of bacteria. You come in, you will die. But of course, I had to follow in. And then he said, sister, I want to build a center here. And I said, that's a crazy idea. And I love it. So let's do it. So in that space, we demolished it, and then we built this beautiful center that is not only a beacon of light, but a representation that we are here to stay. We're going to be proximate to people that we serve. I only have 4 more minutes, guys. I wanted to talk to you about Mishpah and Tzedakah, and I know you guys are theologians and pastors, and you know what that means. But the reason why we do this work of justice is not because I'm actually seeking justice, but I'm actually seeking beauty. Because Mishpah and Tzedakah, when they are in place of this flourishing relationship, as Tzedakah tells us, a relationship where all relationships are in harmonious and flourishing relationship in God's abundance. That word justice actually looks like beauty. And the kind of beauty that we're talking about here is because we know that trauma happens, and I just explained a glimpse of that to you this morning. That beauty has to be restored kintsugi beauty. The kind of mark on Jesus' hand and his side. That glorified beauty that only God can do through his people, his church. When we had this rescue, we asked this woman, young woman, who's been trafficked for a few years, this impossible question. Now that you're free, what do you want? And we love that question, right? Jesus asks us, what do you want? But it's an impossible question for a people who's been impoverished and who's been traumatized, who never been asked this question. I mean, what does that even mean that I can have my own wish? But this woman, God spoke to us through this woman. She had an answer for us. Now that you're free, what do you want? She said, I want to be beautiful again. And that's the work of justice. And that's why we keep pressing on.
What started out as a children's center We added a wing last year called Robin's Nest. And this is a classroom and an art room and also a chef's kitchen, actually, with Economic Development Center, very small room, but it has machines so that the mothers can, when they decide to come out, they have a job. That's very important. And instead of calling it Children's Center or Ministry Center, we're now calling Sahasi Embers Cultural Center. I am Ember's first artist advocate. and I have been so inspired. I've been to Sahasi Embers only twice, but it feels like it's home. I see Naikajan, these faces, and I miss them dearly. So we're going back in February. But I want to have them define, this is very important, rather than imposing my view or anybody else's view, I want them to define what cultural center means and how we can serve them. There are QR codes on your tables with Ember's little brochure. If you're interested at all in finding more about Ember's work, what we're doing there, and if you're interested in even finding out more or being an artist advocate, whatever that means, we're developing this as we go, please email us and let us know that you're interested and we can follow up with you. Just one final thing is, I have based my art on this practice of Nihonga, Japanese painting. Well, that happens to be, Japan happens to be the end of the Silk Road. Do you know where Silk Road started? India. So it makes sense for me to participate in this project of bridging beauty and justice together and to bring back the beauty of Japan back, flowing back through the streams of Silk Road back into India. And when I have started to do that, I discovered so many things. I've learned so many things from these children. You saw the mothers wearing their sari. So beautiful. Wearing like gray t-shirts and they're wearing. And these are the poorest of the poor. And I, to me, that beauty that this girl wants is not only possible, but it's a beauty that we need in our culture. So we will keep going back. Wind Rider team has been following me for the last 8 years. I convinced them to come with me. They came back from India on their first trip with 9.3 terabytes of film. So we're going to have a lot of these films, which we cannot show in public because of the sensitivity of the faces and so forth. But we are so grateful for them. They are also our artist advocates, and they are official partners with Sundance Film Festival. So you see their quality. It's the best. I want whatever we do to offer the best because these children deserve it. But we want to create a cultural center that brings the best of excellence, the feast of the lamb, the banquet of the lamb to come, right? That we are wedding planners, all of us, for the cosmic wedding to come. And that is our job as artists and musicians, is to bring the best to Jesus.
Yes, if I can do one more minute. If your church or your community want to show these films, let us know, and we can show this, and then we can, you know, talk to you about that. I'm a volunteer CEO of Embers International, and this is just our passion. And a lot of times, we don't have time for Q&A, but the one question that I always get is, like, how do you guys, you and Marco, do all of these kind of things? And my answer is, it's integration. Integration of your faith, where I can be a full-time lawyer and a volunteer CEO and helping Marco to do the production of the beautiful exhibition that you saw yesterday. And for all of that, we're also helping and working with Golden Wood to create what is called Institute, to really share for this generation and next generations to come what it means to integrate your faith in everything that you do on your daily basis. So thank you.
Thank you.